number one reason that people miss work is due to injuries from pulling, climbing, cheering, pushing. Where our equipment comes in is they're all built to help avoid those types of injuries.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers.
Manufacturing
Happy Hour. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
Hey, it's episode 176. Today, we're discussing logistics, automated forklifts, and craft beer. That's right, this is a good old-fashioned interview over beers at a brewery, just like Manufacturing Happy Hour was meant to be. Our guest this week is Nick Malowicki. He is the general manager for the autonomous division at Big Joe Forklifts. Now, Big Joe have been around for 50 plus years, and we're talking about a lot of different warehouse style applications, stackers, pallet trucks, order pickers. You get the idea, and we're going to give you even more of an idea in this conversation. So here are a few things you can expect from this episode. First, we're going to catch up on Nick's background and learn about his over 20-year career in warehousing and logistics. Nick has a loaded resume in this space, and we'll learn how he's found ways to take on a diverse set of roles and how it led him to somewhat of a new adventure at Big Joe. Second, we talk about automation in forklifts and warehousing. We'll cover some basic definitions before getting into how it's more than just automating forklifts, but about making material handling workflows smarter. As always, if you want to learn more, go check out the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/176. And before we get into today's episode, I do want to remind you that Automate 2024 is coming up on May 6th through 9th in Chicago, Illinois. If you're listening to this episode before that date, this is the automation show you'll want to go to this year. It's the Association for Advancing Automation, A3. It's their biggest conference yet. More topics, more session, more education. And not to mention, there's going to be over 800 exhibitors, 30,000 registrations. It's going to be big. And also, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be one of the hosts of Automate Live. If you want to be part of an interview similar to this one, well, hey, book your slot to be part of Automate Live. Go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024. That'll take you to the main website. That'll take you to a spot where you can register for free. That'll also take you to a spot where you can sign up for an interview. And maybe most relevant to today's conversation, last year's Automate show is where I met Nick. We'll give you some more backstory on that here in a second. But yes, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024. And just like you're going to go there, we are going to go into today's interview. Now, there's one thing I didn't tell you about this episode, and that's that it starts with a little conversation about beer. I mean, of course there's a conversation about beer. I told you it was happening at a brewery, so grab a pint and join us as we head to Eagle Park Brewing to meet up with Nick Malowicki.
Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
And I didn't realize coming into this that, wow, that's good.
That is good.
I just had to interrupt myself because the beer was shockingly good. I shouldn't say shockingly good. Eagle Park is one of my favorites in the Milwaukee area. I thought you were originally picking this location because it was close to where you do business. I didn't realize you were a member here at Eagle Park Brewing.
I am. My wife and I have been members since about 2019 when they opened up the Muskego location in 2020. It's been fantastic. Very excited that we get to hang out here. It's a pretty family friendly environment as well. And then you got the distillery going on. They've expanded the brewery. Their food, top notch.
We
love coming down and hanging out, especially on Fridays, fish fries.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. So
I do like their fish fry. I tend to frequent the Milwaukee location because we're here at their, like, I would say their industrial scale brewery here in Muskego, about 25 minutes southwest of Milwaukee, for context for all the listeners out there that might not be as familiar. But yeah, this is right in the middle of, very appropriately for this show, more of an industrial area.
Absolutely.
It's not like the typical small tap room you find in your trendy neighborhood. This is where the beer gets made in mass.
Yes, it does.
And they actually recently, we'll provide a little history on this spot. They recently purchased the Milwaukee Brewing Company brand that was I would call an iconic Milwaukee craft brewery that had been around probably, 20 years maybe or so?
At least, yeah.
I mean, certainly when I was here in college, when I got here for college in 2005, it was around, but they kind of rescued that brand, and now they make it here as well. So there's, despite the fact that Eagle Park itself hasn't been around for too long, they've done a lot to put their mark in the Milwaukee beer scene. So I have to ask you one more beer question then sure. Before we get into it. So as a beer aficionado, you're also kind of a barrel-aged beer seeker as well. You mentioned you don't have a drinking problem, but you have a beer buying problem.
Just a little problem.
Yeah.
But so even Eagle Park's barrel-aged program, Booze for Breakfast is a great one that they put out, a little bit maple, coffee. But yes, anything from a hazy IPA to sours, even dabble a little bit in seltzers. I gotta get you to try a Ecto Cooler here before we go.
But, yeah, I will have it. I know I was the one hesitating on that. I'm like, hey man, this is manufacturing happy. I don't know if I'm ready to drink a hard seltzer on camera yet, but it's a spinoff of the old kids drink Ecto Cooler.
It is.
And you said it's green. Ecto Cooler is supposed to be.
Exactly.
All right. So, well,
good stuff.
We will be having that after this interview is done. The next question I have for you is really around, let's say you're hanging out at Eagle Park and you're talking about your job like you are today. How do you describe the future of forklifting as if you're having a drink with someone? Because this is your business. I want to hear your at the bar, at the brewery answer to this.
So future of forklifting. No, it's a great question. Forklifts are getting smarter. They're becoming autonomous. There's telematics now. And all of these innovations, they enhance safety and operator comforts. One of the biggest changes in the forklift industry that we're seeing is a move from internal combustion, or like the propane diesel powered forklifts, to lithium electric.
Yeah.
So companies want to be greener. They want to have a sustainability. So moving that from that propane, that's a typical forklift that everybody knows, to more of that electric while still having the safety and the comforts of the operator. That's really where things are moving right now, and a lot of e-commerce. I mean, think about everybody shopping at home now. That's growing. And the more the e-commerce grows, the more forklifts we're going to need as well.
Yeah. And, I particularly think about lithium and electrification, where, electric cars out in the real world, there are many other factors you need to bring into it, like, where am I going to charge it? How is it going to behave in cold weather? And let's say in a more controlled environment, like a factory or a warehouse, you have that opportunity to, when you need a charge is not that far away.
Correct.
For example. So we're going to get into forklifting and what you're doing at Big Joe later in this interview. But I want to talk a little bit about where we are right now and kind of what the warehouse and logistics scene is like here in southeastern Wisconsin, where you're based, where I live. Give us a little bit about that. What's the scene like here?
So, Wisconsin's historically just a strong manufacturing state. It's centrally located. We have access to the Great Lakes. So the transportation logistics hub, it's important, and it makes a lot of sense for companies to do business out of the state. But I still think that workforce labor issues are still prevalent. Companies are still fighting for that labor pool within the state. But automation is also super important. The percentage of companies that are increasing their investments into automation continues to grow. But a big obstacle of that is the financial impact, and as well as the training for that automation.
Yeah. And here in Wisconsin, we have what I call my corporate alma mater, Rockwell Automation. So we got that. We've got some big names right here locally. So it's been cool. It's cool seeing how this scene has grown just in the short time I've been here. Also, I like your comment about the Great Lakes, because I don't think most people think about that as well as how all of those lakes are connected. So, you know, I'm curious, do you have a story of how you've leveraged that or how you've seen companies leverage that to get, you know, something from point A to point B?
So we import a lot of our hardware, our equipment from our parent company, EP Equipment. And our factory is currently based out of Wisconsin Dells. So being able to bring in those containers from overseas, we are able to leverage Lake Michigan to be able to bring that into port and then truck it up to Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah. So for everyone that doesn't understand, that's connected all the way out to the Atlantic then.
Correct.
That's very cool.
Yes.
That's why we like doing some of these interviews here in the Great Lakes region. So, but hey, we want to talk about you as well in this conversation. And I want to hear the story of how you got into logistics 20 plus years ago, because you've been in this space for a while. And it's not like you've been doing the exact same thing the whole time. You've got some range.
I do have some range. I have a little bit of a eclectic background. So my whole start was with UPS, actually. Was out of high school. My sister-in-law, Sarah, was working at UPS, had always talked about that it was a great company to work for. And I had an opportunity to start at the location that's out of Hotchkins, Illinois. It's called the Chicago Area Consolidation Hub, and it's the largest UPS facility in the world. And from there, was able to move up into management. I actually bounced around a couple locations within UPS. But then eventually, going through school, found that I loved doing what I was doing with operations management. I loved computers, mm-hmm. information systems. So that got me into my degree from Northern Illinois University in operations management and information systems. And really, I was able to take that and start working in warehouses, frontline supervisory positions. Mm-hmm. But I've done everything from frontline supervisor to working in manufacturing environments. I did fleet management with transportation. I have a Six Sigma black belt, so I was doing a lot of continuous improvement exercises.
Yeah.
Traveled a whole lot with a previous organization all across North America. Mm-hmm. But I did relocate, moved around a little bit, but then always looked for those opportunities to not only advance myself and learn, but I would always take those harder, challenging positions. And it really kind of parlayed into what I enjoy doing. I like challenges, mm-hmm. and I like problem solving.
Yeah.
And every single role that I've ever had, there's been a problem or problems that needed to be solved. So I enjoy the problem solving aspect. I enjoy the challenges. UPS kind of started me in not every single day was the same, and was able to do something different every day.
So I have a few questions that came from that.
Sure.
So you were working at UPS, if I'm hearing right, in high school, and that inspired you to pick what you got your degree in.
Just out of high school. So I had just graduated, and it was like probably less than a year after I graduated, I started working part-time at UPS, and that going to the school, and then that helped me decide where I wanted to go with a major.
Do you think you would have ever picked operations management had it not been for that experience? I mean, that's one of those things that I think most people, I feel like for the younger end of our audience, or really the whole audience, right? Mm-hmm. If they're listening to this and have gone through college or trade school or whatever it is, they don't know why they're going into their degree. They think they know why, but you had done the work. You're like, hey, I'm going to learn more about this.
I really think that was the reason why I pursued the degree. And actually, when I had started UPS, I had no clue that there was even a degree that I could get that encompassed both of my my passions of management and then also technology.
We'll be back in a moment, but first, a quick word from our sponsor. Gray Solutions is a systems integrator that you've probably heard me talk about on this show before. Maybe you heard our interview with their CEO, Walker Maddox, or maybe you've heard us talk about how the term systems integrator isn't even a term that fully encompasses who they are. Well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Of everything that Gray Solutions does, they are ahead of their time when it comes to helping manufacturers commission new facilities and new lines with confidence. That's because their 3D modeling capabilities are basically like having a crystal ball. If you want to peer into the future of your facility or process upgrade long before you invest, well, then you should definitely check out episode 171, where we interview Gray Solutions VP of Cool Stuff, Greg Powers. Yes, that's his actual title. That's where you'll hear about their unique approach to 3D modeling. While every other company is throwing the term artificial intelligence around with no context, you'll hear how Gray Solutions is using it to provide hyper-accurate 3D models that help manufacturers revolutionize their business. ManufacturingHappyHour.com/171 will take you right there. So hey, commission with confidence. Pick a partner with a proven track record of project success that's always investing in new, innovative ways to get your projects done faster and better. Check out Gray Solutions on this podcast or at graysolutions.com. And now back to today's episode.
How did you decide what the right role was? You mentioned you were going for those more challenging roles, the harder roles. I'd love to get some advice for the folks listening. How do you do that without picking something that is impossible or not, or something that might not be in line with the company's strategic direction? How do you pick that strategically?
So I'll be honest, I was afforded a lot of opportunities in my career that were presented to me, and I never said no. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were lateral moves. I didn't get promoted. I didn't get a job title change. It was, hey, we want you to do this. Or it honestly was, we have a problem in this shift. For example, you're doing the same thing. You're just going to work nights now. We need you to come over here.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, we have this problem in transportation where our expenses are out of control. We need you to figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it was not necessarily where I was pursuing things, but those opportunities were presented. I also would raise my hand once in a while. So even getting into the automation, I was working within engineering and reviewing a capital project list. There was a lot of automation at the time, that projects that were in flight and starting. And it was commented about how the director at the time didn't have the bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much said, hey, I can do that. I know the warehouse operation. I know the manufacturing. I know the players within the facilities. I can do that. And it was, yeah, we didn't think about you before. Hey, we're going to have a conversation.
Yeah.
A week later, they're like, hey, you're going to be in charge of our whole AGV program. And that kind of started me on my path with the automation. So it was simply just volunteering to say, I can do that. And then having my leadership trust that I could.
It sounds like there was also a mix of you raising your hand, but also you built your brand as a person that was willing to try new things, built your brand
Absolutely.
As a problem solver, where that's how you got tapped on the shoulder for those type of roles.
Yes, absolutely.
Why? What made you, because I'm asking this because I've been in this same boat. I have been a lateral move career guy my whole career. I've been doing this for like 15 years now, if you include co-ops and things like that. Technically, I don't think I've gotten a promotion until I started my own job. I think that was a self-promotion, but I was always really happy with doing the lateral moves because I'm like, I'm learning new things. I'm having a lot of fun doing it. I'm getting new experience. I wasn't as, for me at least, I wasn't like, I need to be in a position that clearly denotes that I got promoted now. I'm like, hey, I got a 40 plus year career ahead of me. That's at least how I looked at it. What was your interest in making those moves and evolving your career that way through lateral transitions?
It really was taking those opportunities to learn.
Yeah.
you know, I mentioned about the transportation fleet management, and I can still remember the conversation I had with my manager at the time saying, I don't know anything about this. Don't worry about it. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then going through that, I had an opportunity to then learn about contracts, negotiate contracts, bring in new trucking companies, learn about trailer repairs. And could I tell you anything about it now? Maybe not. But at least I have that familiarity to that type of work. And I can ask questions to get more answers and get a better understanding of what's happening. And I can even talk about moving into one of the roles. I was a packaging engineering manager. And same manager had the same question. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You know more about it than you think you do. But you know the organization. You know how to clean up the departments as far as making sure that the workflow, the processes, you understand everything. Maybe you can't design a box.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. There's people that design those boxes, but you understand the process, the workflow, and all the ancillary things that go around there. And sure enough, he was right. And that's how I kind of started my engineering role was going into packaging engineering as a manager.
I feel like the thread that I'm hearing from this is the attitude was like, hey, you're someone that can learn, you're willing to learn, you already know all these things about the organization, about the process. We talk a lot about process on the show and why understanding that is so important, because if you understand a process and you know how a process gets made, then you can kind of get thrown into a lot of different roles and be able to adjust from there. One of my last questions that came up just from that initial answer was, Where are some of the other spots you moved to? Were you talking like physical moving?
Physically.
You went to school NIU, here in the northern Midwest, and now you're back here. So what were some of the other exotic places you were roving around to?
Oh, I was in a spot over in Georgia called Evans, Georgia. So it's just outside of Augusta. Got to drive past the Augusta National Golf Course where the Masters is held every year. Worked in Beech Island, South Carolina, and no, it's not a beach like Sandy Beach, and it's not an island. It's beach like a beech tree. But spent a couple years in Georgia, South Carolina area, and then relocated up to just south of Rochester, New York, in Canandaigua, so the Finger Lakes region of New York.
Yeah.
Beautiful area. Spent about 3.5 years there and then relocated back to the Midwest. So. Right.
Okay. So you've had a good career adventure. Let's tie this all together. You know, you have been an engineering manager, director of supply chain engineering, warehouse manager. We've hinted at some of this. If you were to say what the common thread was across those roles in your 20 plus year journey, what would you say it's been?
The common thread is solving problems.
Yep.
Every single role I've had,
there's been a
problem to solve. I got a fun story for you. So one of my favorite movie characters of all time is a character from Pulp Fiction, Winston Wolf.
Yep.
So Winston Wolf, he talks fast, he acts fast, and most importantly, he solves problems.
Yeah.
So I definitely always appreciated that character. He's not a major character, but he is an important character when it comes to solving problems.
Yes, I like that. I love having a pop culture doppelganger to bring in as a comparison. My pop culture doppelganger, not really personality wise, is Bill Lumberg from Office Space, because I dressed up as him for Halloween. It's almost a decade ago now. I think it was 2014, but that has. As someone that is in the corporate world, that has been a very fun thing to play off of within my personal brand. So, but this is about you. So the next question I want to ask is, so this is your career journey so far. What brought you to Big Joe? Because you've been there a couple of years, few years now?
Going on 2 years.
2 years.
So Big Joe, you know, honestly, it was presented as an opportunity, and it's really a once-in-a-career opportunity to be a part of growing something from nothing. So the autonomous division for Big Joe has only been around for about 3 years. And actually, my director of autonomous system design, Michael Kramer, worked with me previously.
Okay.
And had gone over to Big Joe, recommended me for the role, started talking to our president, CEO, Dan Roskam, probably a good solid 7 months of just, here's what's going on. Here's what Big Joe's doing from the autonomous standpoint. And the whole premise is of having somebody that had customer experience from automation, not necessarily a tech heavy or software design, engineering focus, but who was a customer of automation that has lived through the good stuff, but more importantly, what are all the negatives when you're a customer of autonomous solutions? Mm-hmm. And really being able to pull on that experience to help drive and essentially build the autonomous division for Big Joe, then we're very much focused on not having those pain points, eliminating those up front, and being able to provide customers with a upfront solution that's successful from day one.
We'll be right back right after a word from our sponsor. Are you stressed out by last-minute changes in panel building? Maybe you've encountered this scenario. Your customer has requested control cabinets from you and the delivery date is set. You use CAD to create the schematics, you've got your bill of materials, purchasing buys all the components, and then bam, your customer submits last minute changes and you're stuck going backwards to make those changes. If you've been in this situation before, then you need to check out ePlan. ePlan goes beyond your typical CAD software and is ideal for electrical engineering. You can easily integrate component data from hundreds of manufacturers and enter changes just once and apply those changes to the entire project, freeing up your time to take on more important tasks and more customers. You can learn more by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/eplan and make sure to catch our full-length interview with them in episode 132, where we talk panel design, apprenticeships, and manufacturing the world over. And now, back to today's episode.
So I think this ties in very nicely to the next question. How did your diverse logistics experiences help you resolving some of those automation challenges now that you're focused on autonomous lifts? Maybe tell us what those challenges typically are, some of the ones that you've seen that when you jumped into this position, you're like, we need to make sure the people we're working with don't experience this as best we can.
So I'll tell you, number one on my list was we need an all-in price.
Okay.
It cannot be price of hardware is one line item. The software is another, a warranty is another, support is another, deployment is another, training. There's too much that as a customer I experienced where executives got excited because they were like, wow, it's only this much.
Yeah.
And then I had to go back and go, well, no, it's not. And oh, by the way, you had this in your head that it's a year and a half ROI. When in fact, it's probably closer to that 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was all of a sudden now an obstacle to get approval for that capital and to make that progress when it comes to selling it internally, an autonomous solution. So that was my very first thing was where we got to come in on pricing. It has to be all inclusive. We cannot go to market with something that is little bits and pieces,
yeah,
where somebody can then just, from our customer standpoint, we have that one number and then it's quick math.
Yeah.
So, okay, here's where we're going to be as far as an ROI goes. But having the experience from manufacturing, mm-hmm. warehousing, and understanding that flow, it helps me go and talk to customers, and as they're trying to describe their operation, I can make those quick connections to go, okay, hey, you're doing an inbound, you're doing a stage before put away. All right, how big is your warehouse? All right, what kind of racking do you have? I start asking all these questions, and a lot of times customers are looking at me like, why do you know all this? Like, you're an automation guy, or they think that I'm, you know, have an engineering degree, or, you know, very technical. And it's, well, no, I have very much practical knowledge, and I've been in your shoes. I've been an operations manager. I understand your pain points. Mm-hmm. So here's how we can solve that problem for you. As well as then being able to help mentor my team, mm-hmm. and help coach them on asking those questions. So I think all of that, you know, helps.
Yeah. I what I like about your story is you don't have that engineering background, but you found yourself working your way into it, because at the end of the day, engineering is really about problem solving. It's about someone that has that methodology, and it's cool to see how you acquired that experience while you were on the job. I really liked that advice about having an all-in price. I mean, I do the same thing in my business as well. I feel like when you like chop it up and provide too many options, you end up with clients that really aren't ready to work with you or aren't ready to automate. And I appreciate how upfront you were by saying it's like, hey, when you do it this way, yeah, maybe you could have shown it to someone to say, hey, you might get a ROI of a year and a half, right? When in reality, if you do it right, sure, it's going to cost a little more, but your ROI is coming in 3 years, which is still pretty darn good for an investment. So I want to get into AMRs a little bit. Okay. Let's start with something you brought up earlier, because you were working with AGVs. So I think this is a very appropriate question, because as much as we've talked about autonomous mobile robots, AMRs, on this show before, I don't know if anyone's ever really defined the difference on this podcast of what's the difference between an AMR and an automated guided vehicle, an AGV. So let's say we just got a round of Ecto coolers. How do you describe that to someone as if you're having a beer with them? What's the difference?
So there's several differences. You know, it can be anywhere from guidance systems, flexibility, the programming integration. So I think one of the biggest differentials is really from the navigation. A lot of times it's on a fixed path when it comes to an AGV or an automated guided vehicle versus an AMR, or autonomous mobile robot, is always going to try to find the shortest, quickest path from A to B. Mm-hmm. It wants to complete its mission. It's always going to look to try to complete its mission.
It can think. It's really what it comes down to.
It can. You're giving it, I'll just say, autonomy to make those decisions on how best to complete that mission. You can still confine it to an area to work in. You can create boundaries, but within that boundary, now you're giving it the flexibility to see that it completes the mission every single time. AGVs, historically, again, they're usually on a fixed path, so obstacle avoidance doesn't exist when it comes to an AGV. Typically, if a pallet is in its way, it can't get around it. It just stops, and then now it needs to wait for an operator to remove that obstacle for it to continue on its mission. Flexibility standpoint, AGVs, typically there's a little bit more involved in the integration. Let's talk about it, just the warehouse environment. You have racking, you have bulk storage, floor storage, and you define a route for an AGV to go. Changes in your business require you to change out the storage capacity. Maybe you have to add more racking. Maybe you're changing to a drive-in rack versus a flow rack. And well, now you need to go and reprogram that route, or you need to, because the environment changed. So you sometimes have to then call that OEM to come in. Maybe it's a little bit more involved. AMRs, a little more flexible. That racking has changed. Okay, no problem. It's still able to complete its mission because it now just has a new obstacle that it recognizes as a fixed object. That now it'll just continue on its mission without heavy lifting from an OEM to reprogram, etc.
So I'm just going to ask a question, maybe for some of the folks in the audience. Why would anyone even use an AGV in this day and age now versus an AMR if you have that capability to adjust?
So there's obviously pros and cons there.
Yeah.
You know, AGVs, typically sometimes are more on the tugger aspect, mm-hmm. Where you have a defined path and you have a series of carts that you're pulling. You don't want that to go and decide to go around an obstacle when you're carrying five carts of, you know, 10,000 pounds of goods behind it. You want it to stop. There's also lifting capacities. Sometimes AMRs are not designed to be able to lift as much.
Sure.
Weights, you know, going up into racking or storage or picking, as well as then maybe you do have a very established facility where you are not changing. It's a static business. It's a brownfield type facility where one has been, everything's in there, nothing's moving. Mm-hmm. It's a very level business where the seasonality isn't there. Well, and then an AGV, just run that path all day long and, you know, you don't have to worry about the flexibility.
Well, let's go a little bit deeper into AMRs then, specifically relative to your business at Big Joe Forklifts, because, I mean, you move, you stack, you access, you automate material handling. You make workflows smarter in the material handling space. Describe how this is more than just automating a forklift then.
Yeah, so no, that's great. So that is something that we pride ourselves on is being able to make workflows smarter. And that's really the number one mindset is to make ergonomic equipment that prevents injuries, but also makes employees' jobs easier.
Mm-hmm.
We want to empower workers.
Yeah.
We don't want to make their job harder. We want it to be safer. You know, number one reason that people miss work is due to injuries from pulling, climbing,
mm-hmm.
carrying, pushing. Those all are inherent to the injuries seen in workplaces. Where our equipment comes in is they're all built to help avoid those types of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Joey that you can go and we can go all the way up to 192 inches, and it's got a platform in the front, but that's all for picking. Remove the ladders.
Why do you call it a Joey? You can't just like gloss over that. Why do you call it a Joey?
Well, yeah, there is maybe a little bit of a kangaroo analogy,
that's what I thought.
But it is a very the very first one. We call it our J1. It is a smaller compact.
That's what
but it does
I thought
have
that
a,
might be part
has
of it
a little
too.
Little tray in front that you can pick stuff and place and then lower that with you. One of our customers, large national electronics chain, Best Buy. I don't know if you ever heard of them. They
I got
are
a microwave from them. A few other electronics, yeah.
So they have been pulling out all of their ladders, and they have our Joeys in all of their retail stores to be able to pull down that 75-inch TV, the microwave that you bought from their warehouse in the storage. But again, that's being ergonomic. It's safety related, and it's making somebody's job easier and safer.
I like it. I can't, especially when we're actually having like a hazy IPA together, I can't let someone just sneak by something that clearly has a good story behind it while you're describing what you do. No, that's excellent. I think maybe my last question in this portion of the interview is like, what's the vibe like at a Best Buy or of any facility that's leveraging more advanced automation of their material handling than someone that's doing it the old school way?
So it definitely varies based on industry. The vibe inside a large autonomous facility, they're probably focused on efficiency and productivity. That's the mm-hmm. culture they're built on. High throughput. That's their priority. Minimize downtime. Integrate automated, multiple different automated systems. There's a continuous improvement mindset focused on optimizing processes, refining automation systems over time.
Mm-hmm.
safety and collaboration. I mean, that we've already talked about it just from the Big Joe standpoint, that all our equipment is purposely built ergonomically, but also to keep employees safe.
Mm-hmm.
Autonomous systems, definitely a safety-focused organization is going to look to automate unsafe processes within their environments.
Yeah, I thought about including a question around safety in this conversation, but what I think was nice about not doing that is I had a feeling it might come up throughout the entirety of our conversation like it did today. So is there anything you wish I would have asked you that I haven't yet? We're halfway through our IPAs, and it doesn't necessarily have to be about forklifts or automation. You can go back to beer if you want to as well.
You know, with coming to Big Joe and having the opportunity to be able to grow an autonomous division, like I mentioned, be able to build something from nothing, we are definitely seeing where our customers' pain points are. We have our autonomous pallet mover solution that, again, is looking to empower workers, make their jobs easier by eliminating the walking, letting a autonomous mobile robot do the non-value-added work within a facility.
Mm-hmm.
All the travel, that's non-value-added. No customer pays for any supplier to just move stuff around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They pay for the inventory, the receiving, and they pay for the shipping side of things. All those movements within the four walls, they don't care. They just want their stuff to arrive on time and in good quality. So by providing an option for customers who are looking to get into automation, definitely our Big Joe Pallet Mover is a opportunity for those customers who are looking to take that first step into automating a process or multiple processes and being fiscally responsible.
Yeah.
You're not going to break your budget. We are priced under the capital allowances for most organizations. And we're seeing a lot of success with our product out there in the field.
Well, I'm going to have links for everyone out there listening to connect with Nick, to connect with Big Joe Forklifts. We were talking before the interview. I mean, we've been doing this show for over 200 interviews. I'm surprised we haven't talked about warehousing and forklifting to this extent before. So I did think of another question I wanted to ask you. If someone's coming to Eagle Park as a card-carrying member of this brewery, what is the first beer they should be ordering to get a taste for this brewery?
I would say any of their IPAs, order it. You're not going to be disappointed. Second up, you're definitely going to have to get any of their barrel-aged beers.
All right. We talked about both of those at the start. By the way, if you're just visiting Milwaukee or somewhere in Wisconsin, there's a good chance you're going to find their set list around town. That's like their, I don't think it's a session IPA or session pale ale per se, but
American IPA.
American IPA. That's, you're going to find that on tap or in cans in a lot of spots. So, Nick, thanks for picking a great spot for today's conversation. Thanks for the overview. Thanks for taking us through your career. One final cheers.
Absolutely. Cheers.
We're out of here. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thank you for listening. I'm going to add something here at the end to let you know that I did try the Ecto Cooler. And I'll tell you up front, I am not a hard seltzer person, but I really enjoyed that beverage. It was pretty spot on. It was a great take on the 80s high C beverage. If you get to go to Eagle Park Brewing, I highly recommend you at least get a little sampler of that like I did. Even though beer is my go-to, that drink was a lot of fun. Also, after the interview, I made a little joke to Nick that the whole time I didn't make the mistake of calling him Joe at any point based on the name of the company being Big Joe, so I'm patting myself on the back for that one. Anyway, if you want to connect with Nick or Big Joe Forklifts, go to the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/176. And of course, you can find a link to Eagle Park Brewing there as well, along with all the takeaways from this episode. I'm trying to share some of my biggest lessons a little more often. I love the point he made about having an all-in price there during the middle of the interview. I think that simplifies things, makes a better customer experience across the board, Great advice. Anyway, show notes page, manufacturinghappyhour.com/176. And I want to thank our sponsors for this week's episode, Gray Solutions, ePlan, and of course, the Association for Advancing Automation, A3, because they've got their big Automate show coming up. If you are listening to this episode before May 2024, well, hey, meet me there, meet Nick there. He's going to be there as well. It's in Chicago, Illinois on May 6th through 9th. And I told you at the start, it is their biggest yet. 360,000 square feet of exhibitor space, over 800 exhibitors, and 30,000 registrations. There's a lot to talk about there. There's a lot to learn. Of course, if you want to be part of interviews like the ones that we do on Manufacturing Happy Hour, myself and a crew of other industry voices are going to be there conducting interviews all week long. Book a slot for Automate Live by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024. That'll also take you to a spot where you can register, and I hope to see you there. No doubt there will be a Manufacturing Happy Hour party going on one night. More details about that are going to come in future episodes. But we hope to see you in Chicago for Automate 2024, May 6th through 9th. And with that, stay innovative, stay thirsty, and we will catch you again next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.